Welcome to Bees Table Talk, the podcast in which we have great conversations about business and our economy. My name is Bee Kyle, President and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber, and I'm so glad you've joined us. I always enjoy these conversations, or my chance to talk with leaders among us doing great things within the community and their organizations, and today is no different. Indeed, my guest today is a very dear friend and mentor. We go way back. And he's been a leader within the chamber community, certainly for many years. Ken Smith is a graduated board member, former board chair, and a visionary, purpose-driven leader in his own right as CEO of District Energy and Evergreen Energy since 2010. Ken has been in the energy business for over 37 years, consulting, designing, and implementing energy projects globally. He's a frequent speaker nationally and internationally on energy trends, renewable energy, energy conservation, and integrated energy systems. And as CEO of District Energy and Evergreen Energy, Ken has expanded their reach exponentially. Today, District Energy is an internationally acclaimed community energy system in St. Paul. Ken is a proud NDSU grad and earned his MBA from the University of St. Thomas Opus College of Business in 2006. He is a registered professional engineer in several states. And so, Ken, it's so nice to see you. Welcome, and thanks for sitting down with me.
Good to see you too, Bee. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. It's been a while since I saw you. You just got back from a trip. Where were you these last 2 weeks?
Well, I've been in Toronto, Canada, and then I was also in Germany. Both were part of looking at energy systems. So it was an energy conference in Toronto with the International District Energy Association. And I think it was 23 countries represented and focusing on energy systems for the community level. So cities and communities, also college and university campuses and healthcare is a part of that as well. And then in Germany, we've had this exchange between Germany and Minnesota for the past, well, since 2011 on energy policy. And that has been a terrific exchange. There's two exchanges. The first one is on policy and how it plays out at multiple levels, at federal, state, community, and for businesses. And for the climate smart municipalities, it's about what happens specifically at community level. And for that one, we have communities in Minnesota partnered with communities in Germany, and they learn from each other and they accelerate their work to reduce their carbon emissions and to rely increasingly on renewable energy.
Very exciting. I look forward to hearing more about that. And so how did you get here? Folks don't know you necessarily. I'd like to introduce our listeners to you. Tell us a little bit about you and what brought you to Minnesota. Though you look like a good Minnesota farm boy, you are not from Minnesota. So what's
I am
story?
From Minnesota. Oh, okay. My wife's not from Minnesota.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So tell us
I'm
your story.
I'm from Minnesota. I grew up on a farm outside of Staples. When people ask what kind of farming did we do, I say survival. Oh. It was whatever we could do to scratch out a living. It was easier to grow sand burrs than it was crops. Wow. So we had cattle, we had sheep at one time, we had pigs, we had just everything. And it was really for us to make some money doing that, but then also feed ourselves as a family. My wife's from North Dakota, and she had a very similar upbringing on a very small farm out in the middle of nowhere in North Dakota. And it's a whole long story about how we met. Yeah, I'm from Minnesota, and after I graduated college in 1985, I went to Kansas City, and we lived there for nearly 17 years.
Gotcha.
And I came back in 2001. Didn't expect to be coming back to Minnesota, but I was looking for a new opportunity, and one arose here, so we moved the family back.
Nice. Well, you started getting involved with District Energy back in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. So introduce us to, you know, the two names, District Energy, Evergreen Energy. What are they as organizations? I know that District Energy's position, you know, as a nonprofit utility is unique. And then what you've done with Evergreen is really remarkable. So tell us a little bit about those two businesses.
Well, So District Energy St. Paul, I came to the company in 2006. It's a nonprofit utility. That's very unique. And as best knowledge that we have is we're the first nonprofit utility, 501c3 nonprofit utility in the country. And it was really led by George Latimer, who wanted to get a system to serve the downtown area and make it a very, well, make it a model for the nation. That was the vision, to make it a model for the nation.
Which he did. And,
which happened. We're still the largest hot water district energy system in North America, although the Canadians will bypass us here in the next few years. And we've integrated a variety of technologies from biomass, solar, and just a lot of unique things that we've done. Our business model is unique as a nonprofit. Our governance board is unique that we have customers on our board, and it's a partnership with the city on how we point people to our board. And so we've had a number of people come to St. Paul to learn from us. You mentioned the Canadians. So the federal government in Canada is completely redoing their energy system in Ottawa. And they came to St. Paul and spent 3 days with us to understand how they could transition to hot water, how they could start integrating renewables. And then they hired us as a consultant, and we worked with them for many years. And that's now all being implemented in a multi-billion dollar effort in Ottawa. We've had organizations like Stanford University, when they wanted to upgrade their energy systems, they came to St. Paul, they learned from us, and we helped them get that system in place. We actually trained their operators in how to operate hot water systems. So we've been involved in a lot of really cool projects with District Energy St. Paul. And when I joined the company in 2006, and I saw all these people coming to St. Paul to learn from us, the problem was we weren't charging anything.
Monetize your expertise.
Right. And so I said, well, I came out of engineering world and construction and consulting, and I had done projects all over the world. And I said, well, let's start monetizing this. And our people have knowledge. So we're really unique. Evergreen is really unique in our industry in that we provide value all along the life cycle. We use the knowledge of our people to provide value. We consult on putting in plans on how to decarbonize or advance an energy system on your campus. We're working with, we've just been awarded two additional colleges in Ohio to put together.
Where was that in?
In Ohio.
Ohio.
So Kenyon
okay.
College and Denison. We've also, and we're putting in place plans on how would they actually reduce their carbon emissions. And we've done that with Oberlin College, and that's being implemented right now.
Nice.
And so anywhere from coming up with a plan to actually implementing, designing it, implementing it, getting it built, commissioned, operational, and then operating it. And anywhere along that life cycle, we can add value, come alongside our clients, and help them with this journey. It's challenging work. And we've been growing. So we've grown our footprint. When I started in 2006, we were under 60 people, only really in St. Paul. And now we have operations in Chicago. We have operations in Ohio, both in Cleveland, I'm sorry, in Cincinnati and in Oberlin College, Milwaukee Regional Medical Center, Duluth, operations here in St. Paul. And also San Francisco with Mission Rock Utilities, which is a very modern development that's occurring right next to the San Francisco Giants.
Nice. Well, and you mentioned, this is very exciting. You mentioned carbon footprint, and I have toured, I had the good fortune of touring District Energy. And so talking about your energy resources, biomass and others to fuel the district energy system, which provides service to the downtown community. Last year you announced that District Energy is moving to 100% carbon neutral cooling. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So District Energy St. Paul on the heating side has been using biomass as an energy source, as its primary source of heating energy since 2003. So we are coming up on our 20th year of that. We had originally the system was coal fired. It had natural gas. We blended in wood chips in with coal. And the vision was to move away from coal and to use biomass as a renewable energy source. We have that. So looking at what you have in a community is one of the things that we do. And so we've done that for a long time. Over 50% of our heating energy comes from waste wood. It comes from tree trimmings and storm damage, disease trees, those kinds of things. Now, a lot of it's coming from emerald ash borers. We have that spreading throughout the area. On cooling, our cooling energy was coming from, over the years, from steam and electricity, and then we moved to just electricity. And so as the grid is getting greener, our cooling services are getting greener, but we were hearing from a number of our customers that they really wanted to have carbon-free energy to the extent that we could get there. And so we looked at a variety of alternatives and decided to partner with an organization that had energy output, electricity output from projects in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And then we utilized that renewable energy to offset the carbon for our electricity that goes into cooling. So it's carbon neutral cooling for all of our customers. We don't charge any additional for that. We were able to find a very economical way to meet that need. We are looking at longer term, what can we do beyond this? So this is not a pilot, it's in place, and but we're committed to be carbon free going forward. And so we're actually actively engaged in thinking about how do we meet our carbon and meeting that we need going forward is carbon free.
Congratulations, that's a big challenge.
Yeah, we've had a lot of many of our customers just said, we thank you for this. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback from it. Been a few companies in the United States have gone this direction. So we were one of the first. And we like being a leader in it if we can make sense for our customers. It has to make economic sense.
So when you talked about, briefly mentioned some locations across the country, you really have taken on some remarkable projects, both within and outside of the U.S. in terms of consulting. Can you share one or two projects that you're especially proud of?
We've got a lot of projects going on right now. I think one I would mention that I'm really proud of. It's actually in process right now. It's with Oberlin College in Ohio. It's about 35 minutes outside of Cleveland. Small liberal arts college, very well known in the sustainability circles. And they selected us to put in place a plan for how they would meet their carbon goals, reducing their carbon emissions on campus. And that was in 2015. We worked through a variety of alternatives in order to do that. They were at one time coal-fired, serving their heating needs of the campus. Then they moved to natural gas. And when we got involved, they were still a steam system. It was natural gas, a lot of aging infrastructure. And so we came up with a plan on how we would transition them into the most modern technology on heating and cooling of their buildings. Improving the efficiency of the buildings on the campus. So we were receiving at least 30% energy savings. And that's in implementation right now. So at the end of the day, we selected going to a geothermal-based system that will provide heating and cooling. It'll be electrically driven. The electricity will be from renewable energy. So all of it will be carbon-free energy to both heating and cooling of the buildings on the campus. We're in the second year of construction. It's very challenging because you think about a campus, we've got to get in all of these buildings and we have to modernize the systems. And so you wait till they let classes out for the summer and we get in a bunch of work and then allow them to have students coming back in the fall. And that's where we're at right now. So next year, the geothermal well field will start going in. And this is a 4-year project. At the end of it, with the work that's in process right now, they will be within 8% of their goal on carbon emissions. And we are coming up with a plan on how we're going to reduce the rest of that. Our role in this is we work with them to come up with a plan, and we led the design of the implementation. We are now involved with overseeing the implementation, and we are operating the system as well, and we have a long-term agreement to operate the system. So it's going to be a long-term partnership for us. It's a very exciting project. And we were able to achieve some firsts. We were able to get climate certified bonds. $80 million in bonds that were climate certified by a third party. And it was certified because of the strength of the program that we put together.
Wow.
And it was oversubscribed 3 times, where
wow.
there was more demand for those bonds than we had available. So that
amazing.
Received the best interest rate they ever received as a institution that around for 100 years. So very proud of that. And then we've engaged the students. So we've got a number of student interns, and they've come up with really great ideas. And some of those great ideas we've implemented into our work that going forward on other campuses. So we very much are about engaging customers and our community, the stakeholders in the projects that we get involved in, which it makes it meaningful to them as well.
Yeah, you're not afraid of new ideas.
No. Well, my change or die.
Right.
That's a part of it. I'd say the other one that just comes to mind is another one that we're involved in. I mentioned earlier with San Francisco Giants. We started with them. They came to St. Paul and selected us to implement the energy system. First come up with a plan and then implement a system on a brownfield next to their ballpark. And they have very high goals around carbon reduction, water, affordable housing, just a number of things that they wanted to accomplish. It's called Mission Rock. You can look it up. It's very modern and it's in construction right now. And we're also doing black water recycling on that site. So wastewater is being cleaned up and reused for like flushing toilets and those things on the campus. And the first phase is in construction right now, and we'll be going operational with the energy system later this year. And that's another one where we worked on the plan, we did design, and have been involved in the construction, and we will be operating it.
Nice. So you tell people to look it up. I looked it up. I was looking at some of your projects. What's the webpage for folks to learn more about the projects you're working on?
Mission Rock. You just look up Mission Rock and look up Mission Rock San Francisco and you'll find it there. And then Oberlin College, they have a great website on all the things going on with that particular project. It's their carbon neutral project.
And of course, then if you Google Evergreen Energy, you can get a list of all of your projects.
Find the projects as well there. And there's a number of other projects that we're engaged in. Right now we have projects on Vermont and all over. We're stretching our people pretty good at the moment. And we have some really exciting projects that we've just won. I'm not at liberty to share yet, but they'll be coming out soon.
Very cool. Well, you speak about sustainability circles and some of these locations, and your clients are well known, as are you. You recently received the prestigious Norman R. Taylor 2022 award from the International District Energy Association. Congratulations. Tell us about that. That must have been quite an honor.
It is quite an honor. As I posted on LinkedIn, it's one of those awards in our industry that you'd like to be considered for. You don't know if you will be. And then if you can just make the short list of consideration, then that's probably pretty good. But to actually be awarded is quite an honor. Norman R. Taylor was the executive director of International District Energy Association in the 70s. It was a particularly challenging time. And I've not met him. He's passed away now, but he was known in our industry for being kind with people, just how he was as a leader, that he had a bold vision, and just accomplished great things. And so this particular honor, I'm not about promoting myself so much. I like to promote my people and our company. But if I was going to get one, this one means a lot to me. And we have a history at this company of receiving this award. Our first CEO, Hans Niemann, who was from Sweden, was chair of International District Energy Association and also was awarded this award. Anders Reidecker, who I'm sure several people will know, was also from Sweden, and he was chair of IDEA and also was awarded this prestigious award. And I guess I followed in their footsteps. I'm not from Sweden. I'm
like
Swedish
though,
and
right?
I'm German. but I did chair International District Energy Association Board and also received this award. And I'm very proud of it. It while it's an individual award, it also recognizes just the great work of our company. I wouldn't be here without our people and our team mm-hmm. and all the great work that we're doing. And so it's not a one-man show or one-person show. It really isn't.
You know, so my experience of you, Ken, over the years has been surprising in terms of the depth of your visionary thinking. And you've been spending a great deal of time in the energy efficiency and renewable energy space for years. You're a speaker. You're well known internationally in this space. And you spend a lot of time with other visionary leaders. And you've introduced me to a couple. So that's been quite exciting just to listen to the thinking around the future of technology, the future of energy. What can you tell us, you know, with that hat on, what can you tell us of the future ahead in terms of energy and how we should be preparing or supporting it?
The short answer is the energy system, if you look at all of it, the energy system that serves our economy, and this is globally, is fundamentally transforming. Mm. It is a, when people say it's an energy transition, I say, no, it's not an energy transition. It's a transformation. Mm. We are undergoing a transformation to move from carbon intensive energy sources to renewables. And that transformation has been happening. You know, here in Minnesota, we have great work of like Xcel Energy and what they're doing on their grid, Minnesota Power, other utilities are greening up the grid. And that's a big part of it. But we need to see renewable energy as a means to an end. The end is reducing our carbon emissions, our impact on the climate. So there's really two major paths that are occurring right now. And this is true if I go to Finland, which I was there in the fall, or UK, which I was there in the fall, the Nordic countries, you go to Germany and Europe. This is really the two paths, and how this is playing out is you have the renewable energy path. We add renewables onto the grid, or thinking about what kind of renewable energy do we have available to us. And clearly, wind and solar have proven themselves as to be cost effective as the least cost resources that we can put onto the grid. This is playing out that way globally. And then the conversation shifts, well, how do we use all this renewable energy? And so even here in Minnesota, there's a lot of talk about electrification or beneficial electrification, or utilizing that renewable energy to displace carbon intensive energy sources, whether it's coal or natural gas. And then it shifts to the conversation shifts to what's cross-sector coupling. So this idea that I can utilize energy from one sector to another. That sector might be from agriculture to buildings. It might be from manufacturing, for example. So as you're making this progression, we're going to use renewable energy for more things, and we're going to start sharing energy between businesses. That's just going to have to happen in order to effectively decarbonize our energy system. And you're seeing that play out. That's where they are in Germany, where I just was. I was in Finland in the fall. They are well along that curve. They are actually targeting to be fossil fuel free as a country by 2035, and they're on pace to do that. The other part of it then is energy efficiency. And when we talk about energy efficiency, a lot of it talks about lighting, you know, motors, things. I call it efficiency of things, uh-huh. trying to make things more efficient. Then we move to making buildings more efficient. Uh-huh. Now the shift needs to be to making the system more efficient, uh-huh. making it more productive. Energy productivity is a measure of your GDP and your energy. So how much GDP are we getting from the energy that we are using? And so as we move forward, both on this path towards renewable energy and this path towards energy efficiency, they actually will come together, and increasingly so, so that we are taking wasted energy streams from wastewater, from industry, from data centers, for example. We're reusing that energy with electrically driven equipment, heat pumps, for example. There's been a lot of things in the news about heat pumps. And then we will make the overall system much more efficient and productive so that our GDP grows faster than our energy use. That's been happening, but we need to accelerate it much, much more. So just in Europe, they are absolutely accelerating their work on energy efficiency and the deploying of renewable energy. And so these two curves are coming together, and they move to really towards circular economy principles, that we become much more efficient with our resources so that we gain as much economic value as we possibly can before we always then to be disposed of, whether it's from energy or materials or whatever that might be. And in Europe right now, because of the Ukraine war, there's a real push to move much more quickly. The dependence that they've had on particularly natural gas out of Europe and out of Germany is putting them in the real bind. So now they're concerned, are they going to have enough heat for homes and for businesses going into the winter? They're saying they have to restart coal plants that were shut down. That's not because they need the electricity. It's because they need the heat. They take the heat from the coal plants and they put them into businesses. They have a lot of district energy there, and they use it for heating the buildings and the industry. And so that's, we're on this journey. You can see where others are playing it out much more quickly than we are in the United States, but it's happening here too. And it's happening at a rapid pace, in part because the economics are there. Wind and solar are cost effective. Energy efficiency is cost effective, particularly right now when we're seeing natural gas prices. We're experiencing natural gas prices right now in Minnesota that are about two and a half times more than they were at this time last year. So as we have elevated energy prices, we're going to see a push towards efficiency. Just so that's much more cost effective to do so versus long-term returns on it. So that's really what I would say is going on big picture. A big trend is moving towards geothermal-based energy systems, or what we call geo-exchange, utilizing energy from basically that's in the earth, constant temperature of it, but also using energy sources from wastewater, for example, sewage wastewater treatment plants. I was in Toronto a couple of weeks ago. They have multiple projects that are utilizing waste energy from sewage and wastewater treatment facilities and utilizing that energy from heating and cooling.
Do you see geothermal as being affordable in the residential market here in the U.S. anytime soon?
So when you're talking about ground source, right? So when you're saying geothermal, I would say ground source, yes. It is. I mean, there's an investment up front. I have geo-exchange, geothermal, if you will, on
In your cabin, okay.
At my cabin, yes. And it works quite well. You will see more of this being deployed. You will see air source heat pumps being deployed much greater. And we will be moving increasingly away from fossil fuels, in part because we need to, in part because of cost, and for my own personal belief, because we need to for the climate. That's a major trend. That's a global trend right now around moving towards heat pumps on for residential buildings, whether you're doing air source or ground source, or where it makes sense putting in district energy systems. They're growing quite rapidly in Canada, they're growing in Europe, in part because there's efficiency gains and I can use a variety of energy sources to meet the heating and cooling needs of buildings.
Interesting. Question for you about leadership.
One thing I would say is just to prepare. I would pay attention to this. This is coming for businesses. Be thinking about how are you going to move forward into the future Certainly the grid is getting greener. So our utilities are doing a good job and they're going to accelerate that. Xcel is on pace to be 80% carbon free by 2030. Uh-huh. That opens a lot of doors, and we're going to increasingly use that carbon free energy to do more things.
Uh-huh.
And so when you have the opportunity either to do a new build or to replace, be looking at alternatives that leverage that renewable energy. And really look at efficiency. There's so much more we can do with efficiency than we're doing today. We work on projects all the time. We're able to gain 25-30% efficiency gains of buildings.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. So question about leadership. When you were my board chair, and even as we were working up that, you were with the chamber board for a long time and you were generous. We'd spend a lot of time talking about how to think about leadership, you know, coaching me as I was learning my job. And you really offered some wonderful counsel and coaching through my new tenure here at the chamber. And as we think about the last 2 years, I think leadership really has been tested severely. And good leadership has been proven to be critical to an organization navigating a crisis. So what do you think are key traits and or actions for strong leaders right now?
Well, right now, or just my philosophy in general, you got to think about who you're leading. It's the people. And for me, it comes back to the people. And it's hard to lead people if they're not going to follow you. And they need to look for reasons to follow you. Why do people follow anyone? Especially at a time, they're not going to follow bad leaders. So you're just going to pay them so much that they can't afford to leave, right? They can't mm-hmm. make that money anywhere else. And even then they will leave because it's just not sustainable. So my philosophy is you really need to focus on the people that you're leading. And and for us, what do they need to be successful? What resources do they need? We spend a lot of time on training. Explaining, you know, big picture where things are going as an organization. What trends are we seeing in our business that we need to prepare for? And what do they need to prepare for? Making tough decisions as leaders. And we talked about that during the pandemic. There's just tough decisions that need to be made. And people are looking to leaders to make decisions. If they may not always like your decisions, but they'll respect your decisions if they respect you. The mm-hmm. process that you go through, and do they trust you? Mm-hmm. And for me, I keep coming back to my core values. The heart of those core values is integrity. I don't believe, and I share this with every person that comes on board at Evergreen Energy, I don't believe you can be a high-performing team if you don't have a foundation of integrity.
We lost the end of that.
If you don't have a foundation of integrity.
Integrity. Okay. Thank you.
Without integrity, you're not going to have trust in an organization. Without integrity in an organization and with you as a leader, you see it, an organization will function. But it's kind of like the grit in Greece. The machine will run, but everything is harder. It wears on the surfaces. We do workarounds. We put in policies. We put in all kinds of things in place if you don't have integrity at the heart of what you do. So just from pure having a high-performing team, you need to have integrity at the heart of it. And that then, to me, as you focus on people, just the people you serve, your customers, your clients, and the people that you work with, that serve them and making sure that they're getting what they need so they can do outstanding service for your customers. Mm. And throughout this pandemic as a company, when it all hit, we had two things focus on our mission, who we take care of, service to our customers, continuity of service, and taking care of each other, taking care of our people. That was the two things we focused on, taking care of our customers, our clients, taking care of our people. Mm-hmm. Everything else was secondary and do it within our core values as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I lean on. And I lean on that through tough times, and I lean on that in good times.
So, all right. So then one final question would be counsel for the next generation leader, listener, you know, folks who have years ahead in their careers, and they're wanting to, you know, learn about how to think about their work and how they engage in that part of their lives. Any thoughts for them?
What I tell people is they really need to know themselves and what they really enjoy doing. What are they really good at? Where's their passions? It's worked for a long time. Can you be proud of the work that you're doing? Can you feel that at the end of the day, when you go home, when you look in the mirror, that you've done good work, that you've done it in a value system that appreciates you and you appreciate, that you can support? And I would think about where you can provide value and you be valued. So that's what I caution or encourage people to look at. The other thing I also, from a pure resiliency standpoint, I tell folks to look at need industries.
Need industries.
Need industries. So okay. When we're going to have recessions, right? We have recessions, market cycle, it just happens. If you are in areas of need, energy, healthcare, those kinds of things, you'll have more opportunity to be resilient in your career. Mm. Mm. And if you are in areas where it's more want-driven, consumerism-driven, then you'll have more opportunity for disruption in your career. And so it's just something to take into consideration as you're looking towards the future. Where can I get value? Where can I be valued? I could create value. I can be happy in the work I'm doing, align with the values of the organization. And then just consider, well, there might be risks in the area you're working in, just because that's just the nature of business.
Mm-hmm.
We cycle, businesses cycle, markets cycle. And how much of that are you willing to withstand?
Mm. All right. So thank you for that. I ask all my guests, and I really want to know, you are as much of an insider in the work of a chamber as anyone could be. How valuable is chamber engagement to your work? And how can we as an organization do better in service to our clients?
So as an organization, we value chamber engagement a lot. In part, chambers are made up of a variety of businesses and organizations and stakeholders. And so it's a good place to get a sense of what's going on in your community or what kind of trends there are that might be impacting, could impact your business. It's a great place to network and to learn. It's a great place to network and generate business, or maybe even find talent that you need to grow your business is by being involved in the chamber. We're involved in the chamber and the markets that we're involved in because, you know, they're involved in business. And they're not only just the voice of business, they're also getting a sense of what's going on in the business community that's important to them or what concerns they might have. I think in many ways, chamber organizations can help a company navigate a project or something that they're trying to get done in the community and reach a number of stakeholders. But they can also help businesses in general navigate change, bring new ideas to them, bring speakers to them that maybe they don't have access to because of the size of their company, or tease out the talent that's within the larger organizations in their chamber and expose smaller organizations to that talent and those ideas. So there's a lot of ways that chambers connect people and they connect ideas. And all of those things are necessary to navigate a rapidly changing world.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Ken. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you again so much for chatting with me. Such a pleasure to see you. Appreciate your time. You've been doing so much travel that you paused for a moment to chat with us. So thanks so much, Ken.
Thank you, Bea. I enjoyed it. And hope you have a great summer.
You do the same. And thanks to all of you for listening and joining us on Bee's Table Talk. We have more conversations in the weeks ahead, speaking to business leaders in the greater MSP region, hearing from them on how their companies are adapting to the new normal ahead of us. So thanks to all of you, and we'll see you in the trenches.